This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for tuning in this morning. A lot has been written about the effort to attract more women and people of color to what is known as the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math. Leaders in all of those fields have spoken of the need to have a future workforce that better reflects the demographics of the country. But where do we actually stand in attracting students to STEM education? A Wisconsin researcher has begun to get the discussion beyond the anecdotal and into the realm of quantifying the current state of things. Dr. Angela Byers-Winston is an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin Department of Medicine in Madison. She's done extensive work in examining how cultural influences impact career choices, work that has attracted the attention of the White House, which honored her last year as a champion of change. Speaking from Madison, Byers-Winston explained to Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke how researchers like her are reading the current trends.
Typically, the National Science Foundation and several other federal agencies are charged by Congress to keep those data. And so much of the research that I've been looking at in terms of what constitutes underrepresentation is from those agencies. And they typically look at whether or not different groups in the STEM fields have similar proportions of participation to their representation in the general population. So, for example, if African Americans, as of the last census, constitute about 13% of the U.S. population, representation or proportional representation in STEM would suggest that they have about 13% of the share of STEM jobs, which is not the case. And that's how they typically quantify underrepresentation.
Well, and you say that's not the case. So what does the data show in terms of the percentage of STEM-related jobs currently occupied by African Americans and potentially other groups?
The most recent data from the National Research Council in 2011 suggests that about 9% of the college-educated STEM workforce are African-Americans, Latinos, and Native Americans. So again, you can see significantly underrepresented from their larger general population. And women hold about 25% of STEM jobs who are college-educated, although they are 50% of the total college degree holders and almost 51% of the total workforce. So again, when we start to talk about underrepresentation, we're looking at significant disparities between general population percentages and then where they find themselves in the labor market.
Do you have a sense for whether it has gotten better or worse in recent years?
You know, there are lots of opinions about what improvement means. So, for example, if we look at some of the federal agency's success for promoting women and racial ethnic minorities in STEM is based on getting them through STEM degrees, perhaps at the college level, and then retaining them in STEM careers. So that's one index. So typically, if we look at that index, we might say, gee, we're not as far along as we'd like to be. Other indices might say that we have reached success if we get people through these degrees, and even though they don't go into STEM occupations, they take their degrees into other occupational segments like human resource management or other professional occupations where they might take those STEM competencies and apply them in other ways. So that could also be considered success. So it depends on who you ask. The general consensus is that the return on the federal government's investment in broadening participation of underrepresented groups is not quite where they'd like it to be after 20, 30 years of concerted efforts and investment. So one of the examples that I typically refer to is that a recent inventory that the Congress charged the White House administration with completing was an inventory of the investments, the total dollar investments that the federal government had put into STEM education and training. And as of fiscal year 2010, it was $3.4 billion. To broaden participation, that's including workforce training, people who may have been displaced from various segments of the labor force who are then being retrained through job centers in the community, K-12 education, funding more STEM-prepared teachers. All of those efforts constitute about $3.4 billion, and yet we see that we still don't have those larger percentage jumps, if you will, in terms of underrepresented groups going into STEM fields.
That's a lot of money. Is it not enough money, or is there something else that's keeping it from happening?
Well, you know, I think there are numerous reasons. Just as there are numerous reasons that people go into STEM careers, there are numerous reasons that they don't enter those fields. And I typically look at about four different clusters of factors. So when you ask the question, Are we investing enough resources, or are there other issues that we have to address? I think it's a combination. We certainly know that $3.4 billion is a significant amount of money, but the question is, where should we be shooting the arrow to get the best effect in terms of raising people's interest and success rates in STEM? And one of those areas that I look at out of the kind of four clusters are beliefs. That is specifically, many groups we know, like women, like racial ethnic minority men and women, have low confidence or low self-efficacy when we look at STEM activities or skills, especially when we think about math skills. And so when people have low efficacy or low confidence in a task, they're typically not going to pursue it. We know that in general, humans like to pursue those tasks or those behaviors where they think they're going to be successful, and they tend to avoid those areas or those tasks where they don't expect success. So beliefs in their own abilities play a role. Beliefs about the demands of what a STEM degree is and what it will take to complete it, if it's worthwhile. Perhaps they might see a compromise to their social life. If I pursue an engineering degree, I'll never, you know, have to take 15 credits every semester, and I won't have a balanced life. Another area that I typically look at are these social factors in terms of individuals who are underrepresented in STEM, typically not feeling that they belong in those environments. So we know from a lot of research that people express hostile climates in science classes and laboratories. I had one student in one of my previous studies a few years ago here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison who has an engineering degree, who talked about a real-life experience where he walked into a large lecture hall before the course started, sat down in a row where there were some other students sitting, and as soon as he sat down, they got up and moved. And immediately he was feeling like, what did I do? Kind of feeling like he was being ostracized and kind of isolated, which goes to kind of the third cluster of factors that I think are critical when we look at people pursuing STEM careers or why they don't. And that's how the culture of science itself might affect people's attraction to or repulsion away from these fields.
Sure.
We know that the culture of science, for example, is very competitive for many people. It's non-collaborative. And many people who are underrepresented are always dealing with presumptions about their incompetence. There's an interesting article actually published by my colleague Jo Handelsman and her associates at Yale University. It was published in September in the Proceedings in the National Academies of Science. And what they found was that science professors evaluate female undergraduates as less competent than male undergraduates, even when they have the same skills and accomplishments. And what was striking is that female professors were just as biased against women as the male professors were. And the consequences of that, these women applicants who were being assessed by faculty were not offered mentoring. They weren't offered jobs in the lab. They weren't encouraged to go to graduate school. And so when you think about these cultural factors, all of these things, I think, combine to create a very complex, challenging picture for where we should start to intervene to broaden participation of groups who historically have been underrepresented.
What is at stake here? Why is it so important for more minorities and young women to enter STEM-related fields and jobs? And what happens if things don't get better?
Well, I'm going to take a short version as much as I can, because I think there are a lot of reasons why it's so important for racial ethnic minorities and young women to enter STEM. And I'm going to just highlight five very quickly. One is that we know diversity drives innovation. Research has shown this from numerous private organizations and nonprofit groups, as well as Harvard Ed Review has published several studies showing empirical evidence that when people from more diverse backgrounds work together in teams, they tend to outperform homogenous groups. They generate more creative solutions and tend to arrive at solutions faster. So we know that diversity of talent provides more ideas, information, and perspectives, and we need all hands on deck to maintain the national global standing in science and technology. That's number one. Number two, racial ethnic minorities and women are two of the largest segments of the workforce. They are growing in tremendous numbers, and they are a logical target to develop in terms of domestic STEM talent. Number three, the job growth for STEM occupations is extremely high. It's expected to be about 17% in terms of adding new jobs to the labor market by 2018 compared to 10% for the rest of the labor market. So this is a place where people have great opportunities. We have more jobs than we have people to fill them. We also know very quickly, the last 2 points, is that there are great job opportunities for all groups in STEM fields across educational levels. Typically, we think about STEM careers as related for people who have bachelor's degrees or higher. But 27% require more than high school degree but less than a bachelor's degree. So there are opportunities for people across academic levels. And then lastly, why women and racial ethnic minorities should be involved in STEM careers is that they have incredible high salaries. About 26% more on average STEM workers earn than non-STEM workers. So this is one of those occupational groups where it's the best equal opportunity employer. Those are the quick five reasons, and I think what's at stake is if we don't change these trends, then we're losing a lot of human capital that could contribute to STEM innovation.
I've done several interviews about this issue, and it struck me that the one question I've never asked, I wonder if there is a flip side of the coin. Do you think we would be well served to take young people who traditionally have been steered towards STEM fields and encourage them to broaden their horizons as well? Take young people who might be, you know, encouraged in engineering or science classes and say, well, have you ever thought of applying this way you have of thinking of things to history or English or a non-STEM field?
You know, there's a big group. Well, I should say a big group. There is definitely a role and a value for those individuals who are talented in STEM to have market value outside of STEM degrees. We know that. In fact, a good deal of the people who, after 10 years of earning their college degree, leave STEM fields, about 46% leave after 10 years, most of them migrate into other occupational fields where their STEM skills are valued, like upper-level management positions. And so we know that there's this wonderful cross-fertilization of skills where STEM competencies are needed across the labor market. It's not just in those traditionally identified pure occupations that we think about as kind of pure STEM degrees. So the answer is absolutely yes. I think it does not negate the continued focus on how do we get more people who could be interested but are competent and prepared to be successful in STEM, but find themselves kind of turned off.
Sure. The solution to getting more African-Americans and women into STEM fields is not necessarily to suggest more white males go into English.
Right. Exactly.
What made the difference for you?
Excellent. Yes, I'm a counseling psychologist by training, so I would be categorized as a social scientist, although I use my research in quantitative methods basically for work. I'm not doing clinical practice right now, so it's really the scientist part of me that's making a living. And my transition into medicine was really facilitated, and into a scientific career as an academic was really facilitated by people believing in me, seeing something in myself that I didn't necessarily see. I had an incredible sea of support, specifically three women in particular, who were verbally encouraging of me to say, you have talents that would help kind of advance a research career, and you have perspectives and topics that need to be addressed and need to be studied. And so people really encouraged me to see beyond what I could see in myself. And specifically in terms of my recent transition to medicine about 5 years ago as an academic, that was really, I think, focused on or facilitated by medical science, realizing that the wellness, the health of this country is really at stake in terms of addressing healthcare disparities. And what we know from research is that people tend to go into research to study issues that are personally relevant to them. And we know that if we can get more people from a wider group of backgrounds to go into medical research careers or clinical research careers, we could be a little bit further ahead in addressing things like heart disease and obesity and diabetes that disproportionately affect women and racial ethnic minority community. So my success really going into medicine was facilitated by people, I think, seeing the benefit of a scientific approach to how to increase the number of people who go into clinical research as well as other STEM careers.
Do you think a better case needs to be made for how STEM careers just help people in general?
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest reasons that people do not pursue STEM careers, especially at the earlier young adult level, is that they just don't have a good idea about what it is. It's a very narrow kind of one of those occupational clusters where I think people have a lot of stereotypes about people who are maybe socially awkward or introverted or don't have a social life and wear pocket protectors and things like that that may turn some groups off. And so I think raising the awareness of what STEM careers are and what they have to offer, and as you said earlier, their breadth of relevance to a lot of different occupations is a key.
Someday somebody is going to mount a spirited defense of the pocket protector.
I would champion that campaign.
Angela Byers-Winston, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Angela Byers-Winston is an associate professor in the University of Wisconsin Department of Medicine in Madison. She spoke with Mitch Tyke about efforts to attract more women and people of color to STEM fields. You can find a link to more about her work from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, a Milwaukee transplant hopes to convince the land of cheese to try a different dairy delicacy. We'll learn more after a break on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.